ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
AFL Daily for your Monday. Corbin Middlemass with you. Of course, it is time for AFL Monday. I'm joined by Ben Cameron and the Carlton champion Mark Murphy, as always, at the completion of round 8 to pull apart all the hot button issues in footy.
Cook runs inside the forward 50. Would this be the winner? Oh, goodness! What is he cooking? What are we seeing in showdown 59? Braden Cook puts the Crows back in front with 11 seconds to go.
And when the game is against you, you need to defend and you need to fight, and we are not doing it well enough. I can't be any clearer than that.
After 287 days, the Tigers taste success. Richmond win by 11 points.
You know, somebody illegally took photos of information that was on a whiteboard and then decided to make a hero of themselves and put it out in the public domain.
On 774 ABC Melbourne,
ABC Sport Digital
and ABC Listen.
This is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben.
Oh, Monday night in footy season. It's always rich fodder. Illegally taking photos of the whiteboard. We got that on the agenda tonight. Plus, the umpire at the centre of the Zach Butters umpire abuse allegations has been let go by the betting agency. We'll chat about that. The whiteboard. We've also got Mark Murphy, the Carlton champion, in the house as always. Our Mad Mondays. So we'll run them by you as well. If you've got a Mad Monday for us of what made you mad from the weekend of footy, winners and losers, and Ben Cameron's unicorn list all ahead today on AFL Monday on ABC Sport. Corbin and Ben with the Carlton champion Mark Murphy. First of all, Ben Cameron, hello to you.
Hello, Corb. Good to be here. We are a third of the way through the home and away season in the AFL. Can you believe that? 8 rounds into the 24 that we will go through in the home and away season. Earlier today, we were chatting on the phone as well. You're in the office. I wasn't quite in yet. He said, I'm just having issues rubbing off our planning meeting from earlier on this year off the whiteboard. And I said, have you been spooked out by the Brisbane Lions incident? And he said, I hadn't even thought of that.
I hadn't even thought of it. I just saw that it was still up there. It's up there for quite a while. So yeah. If you wanted to get a look at our little planning meeting for this program and all the hard work that goes into it, essentially, it's your name, my name, and Mark's name, and that's about what we do here. We want to hear from you too on 1300 222 774 is the talkback number. The man who the coaches voted as the premier player in the game back in 2011, the Carlton champion, 300 gamer, Mark Murphy. Hello, Murph.
Good to be here. I just want to ask you, a third of the way in, how did the whiteboard actually read from what you wanted to achieve as to how we're actually looking at the moment?
That's a good question. I feel like we're above where we thought we would be. We got a few more ticks.
We're pretty happy with ourselves, are we? Okay.
We're Fremantle and Sydney, I think, at this stage of the season. We're happy enough with that. At 7-1 or whatever they are, at the top of the tree. How was your weekend?
Good weekend. Nice and quiet.
Did you go to the footy?
I went to the footy on Saturday night.
Gee, we'll get to that.
How did you feel walking out of the ground?
I was keen to get home. I took Max along. So I took the young fella, left about halfway through the last lap. Well, I had an early start on Sunday morning with football. taking the 8-year-old on a night game is...
Did you get the train?
I did get the train.
You're on the platform with all the other Carlton fans.
Yeah. I had about a 500-metre walk with one Carlton supporter who was giving me his thoughts. and then got two more thoughts on the way home to South Yarra Station. So it was a good trip home.
That's could you awesome. Imagine if you looked into the aisles and there's the mass exodus of Carlton faithful, and you look down, is that the former Carlton captain Mark Murphy leaving with all of those fans?
Well, and it was quite humid too on Saturday night. So I was in the T-shirt and I felt like I had to get the hoodie on afterwards, but was still spotted and... anyway, those Carlton supporters are very passionate, Corbin, as we know.
The Brett Delidio curl of the cap and just drop that over the eyes as much as you can on the way out. 1300 222 774, the talkback number. There's been some news today, first of all, concerning the umpire who was at the centre of the Zach Butters umpire abuse allegations and tribunal hearing, and that was Nick Foote, who's been let go by the betting agency Sportsbet. So this was a little subplot to the tribunal hearing that Nick Foote does does some work for Sportsbet on a podcast as a racing analyst. Now, the Butters case was thrown out at an appeals board after he was originally given a fine at the tribunal. The AFL stood by Foote's employment with the betting agency, but Sportsbet themselves say that they will no longer employ officials in any code, and as a result, his relationship with the betting agency ends. But somewhat surprisingly, it's not the governing body of Australian rules football that's called it for one of their officials. It comes from the betting partner themselves.
So I think when this story broke and we spoke about it, I was shocked probably by how hot the emotion was from the fans about, an official working for a betting agency on one of their programs. I guess the question now becomes is it a knock on the AFL that they've tick this off, but clearly Sportsbet themselves have decided they don't like the optics of it, having an official working for them as a betting agency, which is a partner of that game.
I assume so, yeah. Mm. It doesn't make the AFL look very good. That basically, they've sized it all up. They thought, yeah, there's no problem with it. And yet the betting agency, who's meant to be, you know, the dark arts of, you know, sports betting and everything else, have come back and essentially said, hey, we don't think it passes the pub test. We're going to do away with it.
So they're not going to employ anyone who's an official within any code.
Within any code.
So official, that's, or like...
Employ code. Officials, yep. In any code is what the wording was. Yep. So
yeah. Interesting.
Well, so there's a few things on that. I mean, in the AFL, conflicts of interest don't exist, do they? Like people just walk between the raindrops with conflicts of interest in the AFL right throughout the history of our game. I think in other areas of life, what you see pretty broadly is people are not selected for roles or stand down from roles, recuse themselves from roles, however you wish to put it, on perceived conflicts of interest, which is probably what this is.
Off the SMS, Jesus, not a great look when Sportsbet beats you to the moral high ground. So it's 1-300-222-774 is the talkback number. That's 1-300-222-774. Corbin and Ben alongside Mark Murphy. This is AFL Monday on ABC Melbourne. Great to have you with us wherever you tuned in across the state. The other news out of the day, unfortunately, it's a far too familiar refrain, this. A homophobic slur is being investigated after Brisbane listed player Kobe Evans, who was taken in last year's national draft by the Brisbane Lions in the 30s, I think he was selected. He's been investigated after admitting to making a homophobic slur in a VFL match at Coburg on the weekend. The integrity unit is investigating the matter. It is worth noting here that Kobe has admitted guilt, shown remorse, and now basically it's in the hands of the AFL. And similarly for what we found in the Lance Collard case and everything that's come before it, Ben, I have no idea how many weeks as a penalty he's going to get for this, and how could you possibly with any kind of confidence say this is what it's going to be?
So it's also my understanding he addressed the Brisbane playing group today, so spoke to them and apologised for the fact that this has happened and is going to lead to a suspension. I think you would look at it and maybe estimate that this is going to be on the lower end, Corbin, because you do speak about the fluctuations that we've seen in some of these punishments. I mean, Lance Collard, for his second offence, was 9 weeks with two suspended, down to 4 weeks with two suspended. We've had 4 weeks for Isaac Rankin, 5 for Reac Andrews, 4 weeks for Jack Graham in the incidents out of last year. The reason given for Jack Graham being 4 weeks was that he self-reported, and he was very remorseful. So Kobe Evans has been very remorseful. He's also a very young man. Not that that is an excuse, because I've actually found, I think, in these instances, what I found at my own footy club is that it was actually the younger cohort that I think would use this language the least. They tend to be more accepting. It tends to be the older...
The old school sort of
thing. Yeah, the old school who sort of have used this language growing up and throughout their 20s that are trying to change their habits, so to speak. So
yeah.
I think it'll be around the 4 week mark, but it's another unforgettable episode for the AFL.
You couldn't possibly say that with any confidence. Like, you couldn't possibly say, hey, this is where I think it's going to land or what it's going to look like, because how would you possibly know? We just had a guy go to the appeals board, essentially got 4 weeks with two suspended for a second offence, and then we know the reaction that came out of it. But in this case, you would think, like in so many of them previously, it'll be a out of the tribunal settlement. But if a player, for example, said, you know what, we can't find a settlement. We asked for three, the AFL wanted five, we decided to put it through the tribunal. If you lost and you were trying to get the least amount of weeks possible, why wouldn't you take it to the appeals board? Because the last time we saw something go to the appeals board, essentially a player got a two-week ban for it. So this is what happens when you don't have a public-facing matrix either. So it's not like the MRO, for example, where everything goes through a grid and they say what it is, and providing that everybody agrees that that's what's occurred, the penalty is very much laid out and makes sense. The AFL hasn't got anything like that, and they've decided for a long period of time to do it behind closed doors. And then we got what we got at the appeals board, which was a complete mess. And now we're in another situation where this is, what, the eighth or ninth or whatever it turns out to be in the last 2 years. And no one can say with any kind of confidence, you know, what the penalty will be.
So would you want the matrix to look like something along the lines of self-reported, remorseful, and then, deductions for that?
Yeah.
And maybe a starting point of 5 weeks.
Well, they need to have a rethink about how they're going about it, because at the moment, clearly this has been Andrew Dillon's thing. And I've been, you know, forgiving of Dillon's administration in recent times, that it's not as if they went from, you know, zero cases to now nine in the last couple of years. So it was happening before, but either the league turned a blind eye and a deaf ear, or that it was just handled. It
wasn't reported.
Yeah. It was handled away from the public eye. So I feel like we're at this point, though, aren't we, where it feels like there's been a steady stream of them. I'm not sure we're improving the way we think we are. So rather than what's the Woody Allen line about, you know, swatting a fly with a Buick, you know, rather than the heavy-handed broken windows theory approach, which is let's just throw games at it, maybe we need to have a rethink as to whether this is the best way to go about it. Do we need to do more education? Do we need to, you know, have a matrix? All those things, I think, should be on the agenda, because we're in the same spot. Let's head to the phones. 1-300-222-774 AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben and the Carlton champion Mark Murphy. Danny is the first of our callers. Hello, Danny.
Oh, good evening. Look, I've had something on my mind for quite a while, and it's to do with all industries, but the football profession is one that players want to get into, and they know how much they can make out of this. They invest their whole lives in it. It's their one-time dream. But how can clubs put up with persisting with players that are never going to likely to be getting back on the track? How is this allowed to happen in the corporate world? Wouldn't be long before a player or a person said, "Look, you know what? I can't make it here. I have to go and find another career path." Why does it persist in football for so long?
What do you mean, Danny? Do you mean in terms of a player who is injured, who is not likely to make it, or I don't totally understand.
As a Kilda supporter, Cozzy, he was sitting on an exercise bike pretty much for 4 years. Max King at the moment, he's breaking down all the time. How long can clubs afford to keep holding these players on their list? And how long can players actually put up with it before it stresses them out till it gets to a case of being a mental health issue? You know, is there no way people can't see the writing on the wall sooner than later?
So you're a St Kilda fan, Danny, and you're referencing, I think, Justin Kaczynski, and then also now Max King, who's suffering a number of recurring injuries and hasn't got on the ground since late in 2024, and has another 6 week hamstring injury, Murph.
Yeah, so two things here. It's from the club's point of view, you've got to outweigh, well, what's the talent like with the player you're talking about, and obviously the thoughts around Max King, how much talent he has got, and the upside that you can get out of him if you get him right eventually. So that's the obvious one, and they're going to keep on going with him for as long as possible at this point in time. The other one's a player's point of view, so that's where the support around the network that players get with welfare, their training, high performance and coaching-wise, to make sure that mentally the player's still in a good space where he can see that there's light at the end of the tunnel, although there's going to be setbacks along the way.
1-300-222-774. What's the sunk cost?
Yeah, fallacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I think also, like, clubs will be as loyal to a player as talented as they are. So that's the reason that Jamari Ugle-Hagan has got a second chance at the Gold Coast Suns. Like, if you are a marginal player and you are repeatedly injured, you'll be delisted. But they look at Max King and say, if we can finally get this guy right, it's going to be all worth it.
So the other side of that is a guy by the name of Nick Cox, who was a top 10 pick all those years ago back in 2020. He spent over 600 days on the sideline and made his return to footy on the weekend. He had to face the independent concussion panel just to be able to play again. He spoke with Ray Chamberlain in the rooms post-game, and he was asked here on ABC Sport as to whether he thought he would never play again.
Yeah, very, very close. I mean, I came home one day to my family and said, you know, I think it's done. I am done. So I look back, and that was probably, you know, a year ago now. I look back on that and go, wow, thank God I had so much support around me to put me back into this position, to get back here doing what I love, because it's hard to see. At the time, everything was really not going back towards playing again. So I'm just really appreciative to everyone that's helped me.
You can hear it in his voice too, how much it meant to him that this is what he wants to do. He wants to be an AFL footballer, and through all those ups and downs, he made it out the other side and got back on the field at the weekend. 1-300-222-774 is the talkback number. The big talking point over the weekend, Murph, was clearly the leaked image of the Brisbane Lions whiteboard. So this was taken at the Lions facility out there at Springfield in the western suburbs of Brisbane. And essentially the story goes it was taken by an Auskick dad that essentially was an Essendon supporter, took the photo, put it on the Facebook page of the Essendon supporters group. And sure enough, it got out from there, made its way into the mainstream footy media and so on and so forth. But if you missed the whiteboard, maybe you're not a footy fan or you've been away at the weekend, essentially it had every Essendon player listed. It had the strengths and the weaknesses. Some players had no strengths. Other players, their weaknesses were listed as being selfish. And for one player, his strength was actually listed as his girlfriend was the only thing that was listed there. And he was a former teammate of so many of the Brisbane Lions players. Where do you sit, Murph, on the scale of big deal to no big deal as this made its way into the public domain?
As a former player, like, I don't think it's a big deal in the fact that I think every game we used to play, you talk about strengths and weaknesses of your opposition and knowing your opponents inside and out. And that's obviously what Brisbane have been doing over a long period of time. Well, I dare say most teams will be doing it, whether or not they have a whiteboard or not. It might be just a conversation within, you know, the mids group and the forwards and backs about, well, who are they likely to come up against and what we should look out for. Who knows where if some of that was all sort of tongue-in-cheek or how much of it was serious, but you can tell the disappointment from listening to Fagan over the weekend about it. I mean, you would be filthy about something that's a in-house thing that you use for most weeks getting out. Personally, I don't think it's much of an issue. The thing that I would look at if I was an Essendon player and I was on that board and there was something about a strength or a weakness of mine, I would actually look at it and actually go, well, yeah, well, maybe that's the outside perception of that club against me. And
feedback's a gift.
Do I need to get working on it and try and prove a point?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's another way of those Essendon players looking at it.
Would you be insulted, or would it throw you if someone said, hey, you're a selfish player?
You'd have to just say, well, that's what the honest opinion are of an opposition team. Mm. So take it as you will. But that's AFL football. It's big business.
We had a laugh at the start with Chris Fagan referring to it as an illegal photo. And
I think that's a bridge too far.
It was a bit hypersensitive, Fags, and I thought he was. Yeah, I'm a big Chris Fagan fan, but he was very defensive in that moment. So it's at the training facility. It was taken through a window, so wasn't technically illegal as an action that was happened here. But I mean, if nothing else, it was a bit rude. But you could argue it was also a bit rude that some of the stuff that was written on the whiteboard, particularly with a player's girlfriend that was brought into it, I think that was the part of it that was the most unsavoury. And given Brisbane's record as well when it comes to issues involving women, there was that well-publicised incident in Las Vegas, obviously, which came out, and the players' partners and the way that they felt as a result of that going back a season or so ago, and obviously their captain was involved in a high-profile incident over the last off-season. So I wonder if that's where they got a little prickly, if they were sort of almost reflexively getting ready to fend off any kind of criticism that came on that front. But I actually thought the footy world in large parts were very much like, yeah, we understand that this is what happens. It was probably one thing that they prefer wouldn't have got out. And there was one thing on the board that I'm sure if they had their time again, they probably thought, look, we don't need that up there. And we also don't need it in view the way that it was. I think... Yeah. You know, they could have been a little sharper with it to make sure that it wasn't viewed through a window or anywhere else.
That's a fair call. I think when you talk about family members and partners, I think they're certainly
best off, left
off,
out
off limits, 100%. Same time too, clubs are very good with opening their doors to people to come into their football club. So, I mean, people have got to really think about what they're walking into. And if they walk past something, you wouldn't take a picture of it. And I'd be filthy if I was at Brisbane Lions as well.
I remember touring the GWS facility, I think, a few years ago, Corbin, with you. And the media manager took us through. And he took us inside the actual locker room. And do you remember Lee Mayrick, who was their media manager, said to us specifically, no photos in here.
Right.
Like no photos. And they had up there, this is what we value, and different bits and pieces. I can't remember it very clearly, but maybe. He was very particular that there were to be no photos in that room, and that was very much protected IP.
I remember we went through Collingwood. Is that the one you meant?
Nope, GWS.
No, GWS.
Well, I had various coaches over that period of time, my career, Corbin, and there was various coaches who wouldn't give us stuff what was getting out, and some would. So there were certain boards where we had our values and expectations where they were in an area where you could actually close it up. So when we weren't actually at the football club and people are walking through the facility,
lock it up.
You can't see anything.
There you go. Yeah.
So a few things on it. I mean, beyond the actual whiteboard and the leak, I think the fact Chris Fagan said he got the idea from Eddie Jones when he was coaching England in rugby union. They had the whiteboard for the English team. Everyone could walk past and write up what they knew on the way through. The other part I liked about it, a big L alongside the left footers, like you write in your books, Corbin.
I was about to say, look like my sheets that I write out.
So finally, players know when the left footer gets it, they're not turning right. They're always turning left.
It was put to me that they had a few issues early on in actually getting a few of the younger boys to watch the vision in advance and do a scouting session. So they thought, well, let's just do it all together. And maybe that's a way to try and solve some of those issues. Back to the phones, 1300 222 774, AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben, the Carlton champion Mark Murphy on ABC Radio, Sport Digital and through ABC Listen. Anthony in Mount Martha is the next of our callers. Hello, Anthony.
Yeah, how are you guys?
Well, thank you.
Good. I'm ringing up about the AFL betting, sports betting, gambling, whatever you want to call it. The AFL's big on social issues, like the voice referendum. It came out and said, we support the yes vote or whatever. I think online gambling the AFL, it's on all their apps. You know, I've got my 12-year-old in the car. He knows all the gambling apps. And it's at all the games. It's on the TV, etc. I think it's a social issue. But with the AFL, money overrides, you know, I find it a bit, I find it hypocrisy a little bit, or strongly, I should say, where money overrides a real social issue that affects our kids. I don't know whether you guys have got kids, but Ari, my son can name a dozen sporting apps off the top of his head. And there's nothing I can do about it. I see it in the old, he's only 12. I can see it with the older players, the under 17s and 19s. They are online gamblers, no doubt, and he will naturally go down that path because it's in his face on every platform of the AFL.
Anthony, appreciate your call. Both of you are parents. A big deal with young Max?
Yeah, I think it is. He sees the matchups, and there's a dollar sign next to it. So he's 8. He already asked, well, what's that mean? So he's constantly already seen that. So he can't go onto an app without seeing it.
Was betting culture big in the locker room? Like, not on footy, but on other sports and racing and everything else?
Yeah. There were, and, well, young men, it's notorious for that. And especially young men who have got a bit of money beside them with some spare time on their hands. So it doesn't mean everyone's into it, but there was certainly a pocket of people that were right into it. And I think that would be the same at every club.
Yeah.
I think it's hard. I'll try and articulate this as best I can. I mean, part of the issue is that as well, we've got the money that comes into the game is largely from the television rights deals. The only place they're really getting advertising money from at the moment is from the gambling companies, which probably tells you how much money they're making. But that's kind of the circle at the moment as well. So the thing that is propping up the AFL is the TV rights money. They're getting their money from the gambling companies, and it's that kind of circle at the moment.
You talk about like traditional media, for example.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the ABC is a bit different, obviously, where they're government funded. But for a lot of these other media organisations, huge part of where they get their money from is from betting agencies.
Yeah. So Anthony Albanese recently has introduced new legislation, I believe.
Yeah, which made almost nobody happy.
Yeah. Yeah. He tried to find some middle ground.
Yeah.
I don't know it well enough to comment on it.
Yeah. People feel like it either hasn't gone far enough or they feel like that it's too harsh and too restrictive. But it's an ongoing conversation. It's a good call. Appreciate Anthony and your contribution. It's our Mad Mondays with Murph. Your thoughts on 1300 222 774. That's 1300 222 774. What are you mad about from the weekend of footy? Let us know. Ben Cameron is here. Hello, Ben.
I've got one, Corb. Rule of the week.
Yep.
Ray Chamberlain swears to us it doesn't happen. They don't pick out a rule of the week. Crossing the centre line for the Rucks this weekend was the rule of the week. I'd love to debate this with Ray. Like, that was picked up in multiple games, incorrectly too. Like, they didn't cross the line, they jumped over the line. I think you said can't suspend the laws of gravity in the air.
Yeah, I did three games. Four games, I saw seven.
Yep.
So
how many were there on Thursday night? Because that's when you get the indication about what are they actually going hard.
Yeah. And Brett Dilidio,
he was all over it, wasn't he?
He was not happy, Lids. he was filthy about the fact that one ruckman wasn't jumping, the other one was, sure enough, floats over halfway, whistle.
Back in the day when Bolts was coach here, you would always say, you'd implore the boys, watch Friday night football. You get an indication of what they're looking for as an umpiring
cohort.
Focus.
Yep.
On the weekend's football, so we all tuned in and you'd get an indication on what they're actually looking at.
You got a Mad Monday?
No.
No, that's all right. I'll give you...
He's a happy man. It's an ironic segment.
No, well, yeah. I've gone hard about the standing on the mark, and I know you two boys disagree with me, but I just hate the calls and the big penalty for such a small indiscretion.
I've got a couple of fun mad things this week. So first one is talk about the laws of gravity and aging and everything else and stuff. Our man Lambert, the physio for the Hawthorn Football Club.
Oh, no.
Poor guy coming off the ground the other day. That was no good at all. So did both hamstring tendons as a result. One of them requires surgery. He's going to miss the trip to Perth this week, which is a rare trip. It became a bit of a slapstick humour on social media too after the events of Thursday night. And the other one is poor Josh Tracy, who's found himself not once but now twice on the wrong end of an errant high five. So he got the loose digit from Andy Brayshaw in the eye in a goal celebration on Friday night in Fremantle's win over the Western Bulldogs. And he was asked about that on ABC Sport on Friday night.
And the high five celebrations, what do you owe Josh Tracy?
Oh, well, probably a slab. he loves celebrating, and he's been poked in the eye twice now celebrating, once from Vossi and now once from me. So I thought for a little bit there I was going to accost us by sending off our big key forward, but he was able to come back on and have a few more good contests for us.
Back to the phones, 1300 222 774. Corbin and Ben with Mark Murphy in studio, AFL Monday on ABC Radio. Craig from Jandjuk is the next of our callers. Hello, Craig.
Thank you. I just wanted to ring and talk about the arc and the pressure we put the umpires under. I just think, why not get rid of the angles that definitively show any of the things that give us stuff to talk about after the game? So when we look at goals or behinds, or do you like the Wayne Harms moment from the grand final in 78, I think it was? Like, that's something we still talk about today because there was conjecture. Get rid of the angles, let the umpires do their job to make the decision on the spot and move on with the game afterwards. The AFL talks about speeding up the game, then we slow it down for these reviews again and again and again and again. What are your thoughts?
Wherever Craig's calling from, that's excellent. I'm absolutely co-signing that sentiment. Just perfect's the enemy of the good. Have a couple of looks at it if you need to, and then racing
all,
on.
All together. You want to get rid of it all together?
No, I'm more, keep it, but 15, 20 seconds, quick look at it, and then off we trot.
I'm happy enough with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if it means we get, say, 75%, we catch the howler, for example, the one that everyone on his couch is sitting there looking at thinking, oh, hang on, like the Leo meme, that it's like, hey, that one's wrong. I think we'll catch those ones. But then the other ones that live in the margins, let's just go with the on-field call.
It's similar to the review system in cricket. It started off being like you get one crack at it just for the howler, and then it's turned into reviewing everything.
Yeah.
Another text here from Riley in Pascoe Vale, who I think is an Eagles fan. I'm mad Minnie still has a job. Time to clear house. I'm a little surprised how hot the Eagles fans have been on Andrew McQualter, who took over a basket case.
6 days ago, we were saying, who would you rather be, McQualter or Uze? And a lot of people saying, oh, McQualter's got the better list at his disposal.
But maybe that's part of why the Eagles fans are so hot. Maybe they feel like, of a sudden there's enough talent there and it's a Richmond team missing 18 players.
That was a bad loss in the weekend.
It was a bad loss. They lost 19 quarters in a row. That is bad. That is very bad. Now, I did see Elliot Yeo disputing whether they were in a rut or not in a post-game interview.
I think he forgot they haven't played well for 5 weeks.
19 quarters in a row you've lost is debating whether they were in a rut. That was bizarre.
I thought when he was trying to explain what they were in, he was actually almost using harsher terminology than rut. Does he know what rut means?
Yeah. Some says like a crevice, but rut's not as extensive.
He was very offended by it, though. It's sort of, he goes real bent out of shape.
Any positivity that I think that the Eagles had after a few games this season has surely worn off by now, hasn't it? After the last... You know, we said 19 of the last 20 quarters that they haven't won. Getting slapped by 100 points and then losing to Richmond who've got 18 missing, it's a big loss.
Sean off the SMS says it's time for the TV rights to return home to ABC TV.
Mm.
I don't think anyone's told the players that.
Players will have to go back to working 9 to 5 and train on Tuesday and Thursday.
Jacinta in Clifton Springs on 1300 222 774. Hello, Jacinta.
Hello, guys. How are you going?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, well, okay. All right, let's... regarding the stand rule, and you know how some people can impinge the 5 metre one because they're following the player.
Yep.
And I forget the example that has been used so much.
Mm.
But I remember Kevin Sheedy a few years ago saying that, how about... if it's an infringement, but it's not like a huge, you know, like...
Yeah, 25 metres, I think Sheeds wanted, didn't he, Jacinta?
Well, I think it was 15, Ben.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah, it might have been... Well, I could be wrong, but it is just ridiculous because I know, I think it was Melbourne and... Like, I'm an ex-netballer and whatever, and you follow your player. Like, you...
Murph didn't, but, yeah, most people do.
On the defensive end, Kevin.
Oh, it was against Melbourne.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about, Ben Miller and Max Gorn. He was in the protected zone and had to go 50 metres and huge penalty.
Yeah, and didn't even know that he was meant to stand.
Mm.
So if it is an infringement, okay, blow the whistle. And if Sheedy did say 25 metres, cool, let's do that. But a 50-metre penalty for something that is so, you know, as umpires.
Good on you, Jacinta. Appreciate that. 1300 222 774 is the talkback number. What do we make of a 25-metre penalty?
Well, I think we just need to get the rule right.
Yeah.
For mine. I know you two like the rule, but... If that's going to be the change where it's a 15 or 25 metre penalty compared to a 50, I'd rather that than the 50.
The problem is, if it's just a 15 metre penalty, players will just exploit it because it takes so long to set up the 15 metres. It doesn't get you far enough anyway.
Well, the umpire can just go, you know what, you haven't stood, come back 15.
Yep. I don't like the Miller-Gorn one. Let's.
That was terrible.
Let's put that to one side. But I think I understand the premise of the rule, which, you know, is to make it 18 versus 17 in that moment so they can move.
And to open up so the player can move quickly.
Yeah.
I'm not against that.
Yeah. All right. Time of the program we love. Former Carlton captain, 300 game out of the man the coaches voted the premier player of the game in 2011 is Mark Murphy.
I've been waiting for this all day. Oh, no, it's probably since Saturday night.
Yeah. Put your Carlton polo on. Yeah. Carlton press conference.
The press is about to begin. Let's go.
The backdrop up. Do you want to ask the first question, Ben?
Yeah. Is Graham Wright about to take Michael Voss on the same walk he took Nathan Buckley on?
I don't think so. Was that the walk of telling him that he's going to be moved on? Yeah, look, I don't think that's happening as yet, but I think the more these losses keep compounding, it's going to get more and more difficult, isn't it? I mean, walking out of there on Saturday night was... And it wasn't just a few fans walking out. I probably walked out at the time when everyone else walked out. It was probably halfway through the last quarter. And I think the sentiment from a lot of Carlton fans was, time's up. So it was probably almost the first time where it looked like that. I'll never say that a team has given up, but they got scored against way too easily in that third quarter, didn't they? And it looked like the tale of what's occurred, especially this season, of being in front at halftime and then getting scored against heavily in the third. and certainly look at weight on the players.
Should they know by now why that's happening and have done something to address it? I mean, it's the 13th time since the start of 2024 they've given up half time lead?
Well, it's an obvious yes, isn't it? I mean, they should, but they continually get it wrong, don't they? So we got to look at, you know, is it structure, personnel, coaching? It's a wheel where there's various facets in it, and you've got to work out what's not, you know, who's not doing what they have said they're going to do, or have we tried to make changes to adjust things? Have we tried to slow momentum? But they just got absolutely smacked out of the center square bounce, freeze, and also just didn't win the contest, and then just didn't get their moments right yet again. So everyone's going to be asking those questions, I would have thought, within that football club at the moment.
Mm. You went through it multiple times with John Barker, who's a good friend of yours. He is permanently known as the caretaker. He was the permanent caretaker coach. Like, what? I think most of us understand that this is going one way for Michael Voss. So I don't want to be disrespectful to someone that is a champion of our game. But
it's hard to think of a scenario now how he would keep the job.
So if it does go down that path, Murph, like, what are the things they need to get right in that process to do this as well as you possibly can?
Well, I think respect's a big part of it to whoever you're talking about in this area. So that's obviously Michael Voss. But it's going to be hard for him, as he's just said then, Corby, for him to go on a massive run, which they did in 2023 when it looked like their season was all but gone. I was at the Gold Coast game that season, and they were down by a bit and came back and won and went on this big run. It's almost it's dream world sort of stuff. They can almost go and do that from now on. So is the writing on the wall? That's the questions that would be getting asked within the hierarchy at the football club at this point in time. And then also, you don't want to, if they are thinking that it's time to move on, then you don't want to leave it too late, do you? You want to try and get into it as early as you can.
I mean, it's funny they play Brisbane this weekend, because you think back to that 2023 prelim final, 5 goals to 0 against Brisbane at the Gabba, and they had a 1 foot in the grand final, and instead they lose that prelim, and from there it's really all gone pear-shaped. Are we seeing I don't like saying this either, because he's a champion as well, one of my favourites, but are we seeing the demise of Paddy Cripps at the moment? 15 disposals or 14 on the weekend? He doesn't look like the player he was.
Well, it's easy to say after one bad game. I know some people would say he hasn't looked like it this year, but he's also probably one of the leading clearance players in the comp still. And I still think, too, you can't underestimate the amount of weight that he'd have on his shoulders at this point in time as well, that he's not just going out there and playing freely. You can see that at this point in time. He's a great leader, and I got really angry today when I hear people talk about, he's not a good leader, and what's his legacy going to be? Because he couldn't have done much more than what he's done for that football club.
This is hurting his reputation, though, isn't it?
Well,
you don't think so?
It is in this point, because when you're 1-7, which they are at the moment, then the questions get asked. And when you, unfortunately for him and the other leaders and the other senior players of that football club, they're getting beaten the same way every week. So it's a hard one, isn't it? Because then it does come back onto the on-field leadership. But it looks like he's worn out a little bit at this point in time. So, and you can understand that. He's a human. So he's not a robot. So
that's what I see. I see a physical and mental and emotional burnout.
Yeah, like, but that's one game. A couple of weeks ago, I thought he was terrific. He didn't finish off his goals in front of goal. He could have kicked probably 2 or 3 and had 28 and been probably best on ground. But when you compound, when you're 1-7 and you've had 14 or 15, I've been there in the same position as captain too, where you're constantly trying to look for other things to try and help and try and plug gaps and do other things. It takes away from your own game as well. And I'm seeing a bit of that.
It's the other thing's the investigation, which is ongoing, obviously, into the Elijah Hollands episode that happened in the Collingwood game. It's been handed over to the AFL. The AFL have reportedly asked more questions back to Carlton. I wonder what role that's playing in the background. It's very hard to try and make a decision as a club on, you know, senior leadership while all that's happening. People were messaging me the other night saying, is this the game? Is this the game? As, you know, there's always a game in the coach's tenure, but I don't know. I just feel like while all this is going on, I'd be very surprised if that happens. I see him at least coaching until the bye in the mid-season, all things being equal.
They've got quite a late bye too, so round 14. It's actually smack bang in the middle of the bye rounds, but Round 14's a little way away.
It's a tough 4 or 5 weeks coming up to. Yeah. I suppose when you're sitting 1-7 every week's tough, but they're playing against some pretty handy sides, aren't they, in this next month of football?
Lids brought this up a couple of weeks ago, and I know Jack Riewoldt said something similar on the weekend about Cody Walker. So obviously Richmond at this stage look like they've got the number one pick. Who knows what happens there with Essendon and Carlton hanging out down the bottom with them. But is it, if you were the Cody Walker camp, would you be reconsidering about possibly going to the Blues next year, father-son?
No, I wouldn't. I know what they've done to the Walker family and how much they've supported Cody on his journey. I'd be very surprised if that was going to be the case. He played a terrific game on the weekend in the Carlton VFL side. Texted Walks, the old man, said, how'd he go? Said, yeah, he was pretty proud of the way in which he went about it, playing his first senior game of football. You'll wear the number one, so I think that they've got everything in their corner at this point in time, the Blues. And I think that comes back to your culture and making sure that they're staying connected with Cody as much as possible and doing everything right. You look and say, well, Richmond, are they a better prospect than what Carlton are at this point in time? Richmond won their first game of the weekend. They've looked pretty average, haven't they?
Yeah.
I know they've got lots of injuries. There's a lot going on at Carlton as well, but I think that the long-term plan is really important. They play that out in front of Cody and let him make that call, but I'd be very, very surprised if he didn't play at Carlton next year.
Mark Murphy in studio every Monday. This is AFL Monday on ABC Radio with Corbin and Ben. Your calls on 1300 222 774. Coming up, if you are listening to your local radio, you'll hear David Astle's evening program, which is coming up next. I noticed last week David Astle's program following us, Ben, they came up with a collective noun for the unicorn.
They did.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it. Yeah. I'm not even certain what the word is.
I think they went with unicornucopia.
Okay.
Was the prevailing view. There was, I think if you Google it and everything else, they talk about a collective noun being a blessing.
They do.
Which seems very appropriate for a group of unicorns. But you are on Unicorn Watch, as you do every single week here on AFL Monday. So if you're new to this, essentially, Ben, it feels like the term unicorn is far too overused.
It's the most overused phrase in football at the moment. So the unique unicorn list that we have at the moment. So these are different players that have been called unicorns by different people. Luke Jackson, Ethan Reid, Mark Blitzarve, Sam Darcy, Dan Curtin, and Jobe Shanahan, as well as a historical reference for Justin Westhoff. Wow. We had a new one over the weekend, though.
Before we get to that on the midweek tackle on Fox Footy, Lauren Wood was throwing the U word around. This is what she had to say on Tuesday night.
We'll look around the competition and the contract news. My man, the unicorn, where could he be at on his deal? Contract time, our favourite time of the week. Now, Luke Jackson, he is the unicorn over West, but there could be a trigger.
So that was another nom for Luke Jackson.
A double-dipping unicorn again from Lauren Wood there. So Lauren's in my scope at the moment. Was Josh Barnes on Midweek Tackle last week?
No.
Because he was the offending party.
He's a panellist on Midweek Tackle.
Who listed a new name to add to the unicorn list, Josh Weddle.
Wow.
So in his writing on Code Sport said that Josh Weddle was a unicorn and that Sam Mitchell would use his unicorn how he sees fit moving forward. I did also see, and I don't want to dox the kid because I just could be, you got to be careful with these things on radio, but I did see a social media account referencing a school player.
No.
A little baby unicorn.
Oh, no.
Junior unicorn.
A junior unicorn listing this school footballer as a unicorn. So I can't give the name.
Oh, I thought you were playing some audio for me then.
It's out of hand.
Unicorn foal.
There's unicorns everywhere. If you hear one in the football media, let Ben Cameron know. He's our unicorn ranger. He's out and about trying to collate as many unicorns as he can because it's a pandemic. They're out of control in the footy world. 1-300-222-774, the talkback number.
There were some unconfirmed sightings as well in the pre-game before the showdown.
Okay.
From Doc Clark. Which I can only imagine he was referring to Dan Curtin, who had played in the SANFL. And there was an unconfirmed sighting in Q4 of the Expansion Cup last night on the ABC broadcast there. So
not only get in touch with Ben, but if you can give us a timestamp and someone who said it, it'd be easier for us to track it. Yep.
Aram said, look, he texted me and he sent me a message on Instagram and said, look, I heard it in Q4. I don't know when. So it's bad news for Jules.
It's bad news for us.
To the whole quarter.
We don't have half an hour on a Monday to search for the whole quarter. So if you can be a little more specific with the unicorn sightings, that'll help too. Some winners and losers before we get out of here. Tell me some good things that happened, Murph, on the weekend of footy. Any highlights, things that stand out, big winners across the weekend?
I was actually going to mention Cody Walker earlier, but I got to mention him again. Sorry, I've just dropped the lid of my bottle, which got some airtime then. But Cody Walker, I think he had a huge game in terms of contested possessions, which is something that he's obviously very good at, but he's also really great on the outside from Spino Andrew, his old man. But he was very proud of the way in which he went about on the weekend, had a win too, wearing the number 76. So
yeah,
it's a very,
number.
Very heavy number that he wore. And I saw Jordan Russell, who's the head of development down there at the Blues, present him that jumper. And so we tried to get you one as close as we could to the number one. 76 was the outcome.
What about Max Murphy? He booted 4 goals, 3 1/4 yesterday, I'm told.
Yeah, in the wet conditions. Mm. The cream rises to the top.
It does.
So in the wet, Benny.
The only bad news for Carlton fans is that the Murphys don't go
far. No, that's right. He's going somewhere else.
He'll end up at a different club. It won't be Carlton.
What about Mally Rosa? So, had an absolute day out in Sydney yesterday. You were there, Ben, obviously, calling this game for ABC Sport. Kick 7. He's the number one rated kick in the game. So, an incredible start in his life as a Sydney Swan. And he was asked a particular question last post-game, which was this one. This is how it played out on ABC Sport.
I've got one question for you. Who is actually playing on you today?
I forgot his name.
You don't need to know his name. Don't worry. He needs to know your name.
How good is that? Forgot his name.
Brilliant. Love that.
That's great.
It was Chankwath Jath who played on him for a lot of the day. So
it's a difficult name. He got a little bit of space, didn't he?
They didn't go near him.
The ball fell in his lap a couple of times, and he's just had one of those days.
Any other winners?
I've got Braden Cook.
Yes.
The late goal, that was a good one. Nick Cox.
Speaking of best kicks, by the way, he's just about Adelaide's best kick. Superb, Braden Cook.
Richmond overall, the losers. What about Sam Cumming going the wrong way?
Yes.
Didn't know if he was coming or going, so to speak.
Oh, very good.
But did you play with anyone who went the wrong way at any
Mitch
point?
Mitch Robinson did it on a couple of occasions.
Not just once.
Serious loser. Essendon fans. Like, it's one thing for the team to be losing, and everybody's frustrated about that. And Essendon fans have been very patient for a long period of time. But we, don't need to be booing Ben Mackay. So
they were back to that, were they?
But in huge number on the weekend. So that was a pretty ugly episode. Not a fan of that.
Yeah, I don't like that either. The Auskick parent, Corbin,
taking
the photo illegally. I don't think it was illegal, but it was poor.
Can you imagine when that story blows up? You'd be feeling a little nervous, wouldn't you?
I don't know the colour, I tell you.
Imagine the walls just closing in and you're thinking, gee, this has become a big story. That was AFL Monday. If you want to listen to it live each week, you can find it streamed through ABC Listen and airs on ABC Radio across Victoria and the talkback number 1300 222 774 if you want to join in the party live at 6:30 p.m. Eastern each week. Of course, this is ABC AFL Daily, your home of the footy conversation. Tell your friends about it and even the people you don't like. 5 episodes a week, including on Tuesdays when I'm ordinarily joined by Bob Murphy. He'll still be here. I won't be. Ben Cameron will be in the chair tomorrow with Bob Murphy. I'll catch you later in the week.